of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's April 27th. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host. Tonight I'm joined by Sam Merritt, the co-host. How are you, Sam?
Hey, good. How are you? It's good all good in you, the buddy. Civilization of Beer today, man.
All right, Sam from Civilization of Beer and Good Beer Seal. GoodBeerSeal.com is our sponsor in association of New York City Good Beer Bars. Well, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio. We have some special guests tonight, Erica Shea and Stephen Valland from Brooklyn Brew Shop. Home brewing has been taking over. There's over 700,000 homebrewers in America right now, and this coming Saturday is the National Homebrew Day. At I know Diamond Bar in Brooklyn is having a special event where they're going to be demonstrating homebrewing. Last year, in 2009, there were over 342 sites around the world in six continents that had locations where you could learn homebrewing. And the one in New York is the Diamond Bar in Brooklyn on Saturday. And I know that some of my friends like Chris Kuzme from the New York City Homebrewers and Malted Barley Association Society, they'll be there. So this is a great week to have a homebrew shop on board.
And if you want more information about those, definitely check out the Brewers Association website. And that's where the Homebrewers Association resides, and they'll have listings of everything.
Excellent. The Brewers Association. So Erica and Steven, we've known you guys for a while. We've been following your rapid ascent. You've been in notable media and on TV. I think I saw you on Taxi TV once. Is that true?
Yeah. That is true. It's really funny how many people actually come up to us and they're like, you were in the Taxi, weren't you? I was like, well, apparently Taxi is the way to advertise.
So let's ask the basics. How did you guys get started doing this?
Well, we got started. Basically, we were making pasta and ice cream, and then Erica went up to her parents' house in Boston, and she found an old carboy, just a big, like, 5-gallon glass carboy covered in dust, and she...
In the creepiest basement in the world.
Yeah, my one house of those is dirt like, basement floors.
Yeah, it's 250 years old. It's like jagged rock walls and dirt floors.
Yeah, so
it's
unfinished
terrifying.
That you're not sure if they started. But we found that, and she let me know that she had it, and she asked if I wanted to get brewing, and I said yes.
Yeah, and then it was funny because I didn't actually like beer at the time, but I really liked hobbies and food and cooking and just thought it was a really great winter activity to do, but came back and got totally addicted to it and realized that I was just drinking bad beer and that there is a lot of really great craft beers out there and great beer that you can make in your own kitchen.
Wow. Was one of you the leader in terms of making the beer, or did you guys always collaborate?
Not really. I think just during the process, there are some parts that I like doing more, some parts that she liked doing more, and then...
Or rather, Steven does all the heavy lifting, because I can't lift a full 5-gallon carboy to save my life. Probably why the 1-gallon ones were invented.
Yeah, but we usually come up with a recipe. One person comes up with a recipe, another person alters it, and then we do a third batch that's just kind of whatever.
We compete.
Yeah, we do compete.
And tell us the story. You guys have a website. How do you sell your product? And tell us more about your product.
Oh, yeah.
You have a very interesting story. I mean, homebrewing, and Sam will attest to this, it's been going on a long time, but it hasn't been legal for that long. No. Tell us the history of homebrewing in America, Sam.
Well, briefly, after Prohibition was repealed in 1933, and what happened was the laws went on the books on what you could make at home. People had been making beer at home, you know, during Prohibition, but the laws wrote in that you could make wine at home, and they left out beer. And so 1978, so people had been making beer on their own since Prohibition, but 1978, Jimmy Carter signed a bill that said you could make, I think, up to a 500 gallons of beer at home per year, and no taxes, and totally legal and good to go. So that's really where it started to really take off. And I think I brewed my first batch of beer with my dad in 1981. And it was awful. Everything blew up. And
what kind of beer was it, Sam?
It was, I don't even remember. You know, I was 11. But we put a raisin in every bottle expecting to boost our alcohol because of the sugars in the raisin. And turns out that's a really precise thing. And if you'd use too much sugar, you get more carbonation than the bottle can handle. And so everything exploded. And we put it down for 15 years after that. So it's really hard to make good beer, really easy to make bad beer. You know, and that's why we need people like these guys to guide people and teach them how to do it nice. So the first
early
time.
Days of homebrewing, it was guys like Sam and his dad just pittering and tuttering away.
Oh, just boiling bottles and torturing
there
ourselves.
There was a place in Soho for a long time. It was an old school wine shop that also had vinegar making supplies and beer making supplies. And everything was dusty. Yes. It was like this old store. Do you remember that store?
I think it was the Little Shop of Hops.
There was another one too. It had an Italian name or an Irish name, but you know things really weren't quite the way they are now.
Yeah.
And what's changed? I mean,
sanitation has improved so much. Just like because my dad was a home brewer, how we came about the Carboy, but he was like, oh yeah, you have to like boil the bottles and bleach, and I'm like, oh no. And there's definitely a lot better, like no rinse, food grade sanitizers that really keep everything clean and. Makes life a little bit easier, so you just spray everything down.
But I mean, for you guys, I mean, what I'm trying to say is you guys can plug your business now.
Yeah.
I mean, what's changed in that? You know, before it was you had to go to a shop and things were dusty, or you had to order things, and now you've got, do you guys sell? You have a special a complete set
for home brewing? Yeah, we figured that a lot of people weren't making beer because they were intimidated both by the time it takes and by the amount of equipment that anyone would need. So we scaled down the normal 5-gallon kit to 1 gallon to make it more apartment friendly. So you can repurpose things that you already have around your kitchen and make it more like cooking than a weird science project.
Oh, that's great.
Basically.
Yeah. What a great idea.
You could just use, and we start people off with all grain, which I think is the biggest difference, where most kits use extract, and it's just something that we don't believe in, really. It's this kind of big myth that all grain is so much harder. But it's like making a big pot of oatmeal and then separating the liquids from the solids.
Really, really good oatmeal.
Really good oatmeal.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So you guys basically sell a kit with what? With a jar or with, grains? Tell us all.
We
don't know anything about your business, so tell me all about it.
Come on now.
I live in Long Island. I don't know anything.
We do a 1 gallon and 5 gallon kits, and they include a recipe mix. And all the recipes we come up with ourselves, we base them pretty much on what's at the green market, what's in season. And that's how beer always has been made. And so styles really developed on a calendar basis. And you're supposed to brew at certain times of the year, certain things. And so we really go by that and then throw in whatever's fun. The two beers we brought today are, we just came out with, they're two Belgian blondes with like a biscuity malt profile. And the one we're tasting now, our rose-cheeked and blonde, has rose hips and rosebuds, which we thought were nice for spring. And then in a second, you'll try the lavender, which has this strange, calming one. It's nice. It's relaxing.
No, this is a beautiful beer. I mean, you're almost talking like a healing tea merchant.
Yeah.
To me, sometimes beer is similar to tea. There's a brewing process, and
I'm so excited to see things other than hops, and I'm really glad you're putting them in there. And that lavender just comes right out. It's beautiful. I can just picture lots of good food.
Yeah, when you close your eyes on a nice warm day, it makes you feel like you're on a swing set.
Yeah.
That was the goal. I think we won.
A swing set.
And maybe a swing set that you jump off of into a kiddie pool, you know.
Filled with lavender.
Filled with lavender, of course.
But I still want to know more about you.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've known you for a while. I've seen you do some seminars. I mean, what is it that you do?
We teach classes. We've taught classes, several classes at Jimmy's 43, your bar in the East Village.
That we love.
Yes. And we sell online at brooklynbrewshop.com, and we sell at the Brooklyn Flea, which is a great outdoor market all year long in Brooklyn that has all sorts of great entrepreneurs doing all sorts of great things.
So it's time for me to learn to make beer because I never did. So I should buy one of your kits. Mm-hmm. And it has recipes and ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's soup to nuts. Everything I need to know.
The kit's $40. It comes with everything you need except for a strainer, stock pot, and a funnel.
And one of the things they say about the homebrew suppliers and the people that give you the equipment and the ingredients and everything is that it's only as good as the people that are selling it because... it is, you know, maddening amounts of cooking and time and energy, and you really need guidance. And so it's only as good as the people that are selling it to you. And so these guys not only are, you know, conveying the physical properties of homebrewing, but the know-how and the sort of guidance that really needs to happen.
Well, the other thing I like about Eric and Steven at it's brooklynbrewshop.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is that the beer I'm drinking is really good. So they're not just like peddlers of a kit or, you know, some supplies. They're actually making their recipes, and I'm sure you're testing them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because your beer is always, every beer I've had that you've made has been really good.
So
you're testing your recipes
batches.
And then you're selling like your best recipes. Is that what it is?
Yeah, we do tests on like, we usually do a couple of rounds of tests for each recipe. We do typically three at a time because we do it 1 gallon at a time. You can do three batches all at once and change just the hops or change just the spices. So it adds a lot of versatility that a lot of advanced home brewers come to us and scale it down to 1 gallon because it's
so much easier to test something that you're skeptical about on a 1 gallon scale than on a 5 gallon where you're going to get 50 bottles that you might consider undrinkable at that point. So if you're going to throw a lobster into your beer, you would probably want to do it on a 1 gallon scale.
You have a calculator. It's called Calculus on your website?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought it was some sort of formulation tool.
I mean, we like Beer Tools a lot.
Okay.
They have a really good program. And what we like about their program is that you can edit the ingredients in there. So
okay.
If you're looking at Hallertau and they have it at a different
alpha rating. Or,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yours
is
in
so it's called Beer Tools.
Beer Tools.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a website.
It's a program on a website. And then after you create your own recipes, you can upload them
cool.
to their website and people can comment.
That guy that was in that had just graduated Siebel has a website called Diesel Draft.
Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck.
Yeah, one of our regular
guests. He has a really wonderful spreadsheet that you can do for recipes as well.
So how did, is on Saturday, it's National Homebrew Day. How did that ever come about, Sam? Because I never had heard of it before the show.
Well, 1988 is the year that it came about. And so squarely 10 years after Jimmy Carter. And that's as far as my research went this afternoon before I fed the dog and left. But basically, you know, for something to have a national day within 10 years is a really, really wonderful thing. And if, you know, this proves that this grassroots stuff, especially with the beer, really works. And so, you know, to spread over 6 continents from, you know, the signing of one little bill that told people that they could, you know, go ahead and make some beer at home is a huge, huge thing. You know, homebrewing is it's a teachable thing. You really have to have other people involved in order to keep the faith and keep doing it because it doesn't turn out well sometimes.
Oh, no, that's actually what we found in the beginning was that everything we researched online or in books was either kind of dumbed down or way, way, way too technical and telling you to check the pH of this and create all these things like mash tuns and out of coolers and drills and copper tubing. And I was like, wow. And what we really wanted to do was make it a lot more like cooking and a lot more approachable because it's something that has been going on forever. Like long before Prohibition, people
were
brewing at home. The
founding fathers made beer. They didn't have weird mash tuns made out of igloo
coolers.
Sure. And
they
weird
traded
PVC
ideas,
pipes.
You know, about it intimately. And so it's like it's baking, you know, and although it's not, you know, the oven, it's heat and stuff. And to bake, you have to be precise. And that's what it's all about is this precise heat, the precise amount of time to do things. And that's really, that's the tough part. And you have to wait 2-3 weeks. And, you know, it's like putting a souffle in the oven and then you have to wait 2 or 3 weeks to see if it's good. And so once it comes out, there's this anxiousness.
That's why you just have to do it all the time because
yes.
Then you always have new things coming out and you're like, okay, well, I can't have the new smoked beer we just made for another couple of weeks, but I do get to have all this other beer. So
what are some of the other recipes that you have right now that you really like? Because I'm excited. I want to try more of your beers.
Yeah, we have a grapefruit honey ale. We have a chocolate maple porter. The grapefruit uses actual grapefruit rinds that you dry out and throw them in. Really citrusy, complements the Amarillo hops really well. The chocolate maple porter has maple syrup. When you bottle, you get the carbonation from the maple syrup. It has a really nice, smooth carbonation.
BrooklynBrewShop.com.
Good for you,
Eric
guys.
And Steven, my buddies, and I love your beer. I'm really happy today. We had an email question or email comment from last week.
Great email question.
Last week when we had Mike and Sean from Victory Brewing and Union Beer, and Sam was here, a gentleman named Steve Slosser, a listener from Orlando, Florida. We have listeners now from Westchester, Long Island, and Florida. He was surprised to hear about Florida's own Saint Somewhere Brewing on last week's program. One of the beers they have is called Saint Somewhere, the Saison Athene. And I don't think it's available in Florida, but we do get it in New York, and the Shelton brothers kind of distribute it throughout the states. They have a website. It was mentioned on last week's show that they do not have a website, but they do. It is www.saintsomewherebrewing.com. Thanks for sending that in, Steve. Let's take a little break. This is Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you. Thank you, Jimi Hendrix. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Jimmy Carbone, your co-host from Jimmy's Number 43, with Sam Merritt from Civilization of Beer. Our sponsor tonight is the Good Beer Seal and Association of New York City Good Beer Bars. And we're on the Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.com. One thing I can say, our show is live every Tuesdays at 5. You can also get us on iTunes now at Beer Sessions Radio. And also, come to the website anytime, heritageradionetwork.com. And our show is archived. So if you haven't looked at the website, you can actually see all the subjects and the names and the websites and the beers that we talk about. And that's one of the coolest things about Heritage Radio Network.
These guys in this, you know, corrugated thing that we do this radio show from are really good at that.
Yeah, we got Jack Kingsley and Bree O'Connor, our co-producers, and Nat Wieners, the engineer. It's a really great team out here. If you ever come out to Roberta's in Bushwick, we're in the backyard. It's a little corrugated, you know, old train station shack. What is this called?
It's a shipping container.
Shipping container.
Yeah. And the roof serves as a garden. So it's like
rooftop garden.
It's like Valhalla, where the goat Hedron, you know, walks on it.
It's a really cool place. And I'm actually really impressed with Roberta's food. We usually, after gorgeous our show, food. If you ever want to come out at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday to Roberta's, we eat dinner and we got steak for two and
we pizzas. We wreck the bone marrow here. We wreck
bone
it.
Bone marrow. So here we are, me and Sam, Jimmy and Sam, and our special guests, Erica and Steven from BrooklynBrewShop.com. We have a great question here from Tom in Brooklyn. I actually know Tom. He's a cool guy. He's got two kids, and he works in the film industry. So he's not a beer guy, a beer industry guy. And a lot of our listeners aren't, but they want to know more about beer. And his question is, when I was a kid, beer came from Milwaukee. Now you don't hear about it anymore. Why did that change, and when? Sam, tell us a little bit about the history of brewing in Milwaukee.
Well, I first have to tag a little book that I just read recently. It's called It's by Maureen Ogle, and it's called I'll get back to you on it. But anyway, it starts in Milwaukee, and it talks about Best and Pabst and the guys and Miller. And before St. Louis came around and it office Bush started AB, Milwaukee was actually the first place. But what happened was AB totally did a better job with them at distribution, making the first double-walled rail cars so that draft could be shipped cold, coming out with the first manufactured bottles that were all 12 ounces, things like this. And they they pretty much beat up on Milwaukee as far as a brewing town. So Milwaukee still is famous for the Miller and the Pabst and a few other brands, but that's what happened. It was basically St. Louis came in, and then if you're from New York, the Miller people did a lot better until the 80s when the Coors people came out here to the East Coast. So Milwaukee has been beat up as a brewing town for a while, and now, you know, if you're listening to Beer Sessions Radio, Milwaukee doesn't get a lot of play.
Well, let's talk about, since we're talking about craft, and we even include regional beers now in our conversation. Steven and Erica, would you like to tell us about any favorite beers from Wisconsin? Does anybody know about?
Oh, Schaffle is from...
Yeah, it's from St. Louis.
That's not Wisconsin.
Oh, dear God. I told you I was bad at geography.
A few years ago at Jimmy's Number 43, we did have a Wisconsin beer and cheese
honey,
tasting.
That's St. Louis.
But we have some special guests who just came in.
Yeah.
Some award-winning homebrewers, Michael and Manuela. I got to get your names down. Michael... and Mike Henderson and Manuela Toda, who I know from Jimmy's Number 43. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Hey, good to be here.
Hi.
All right.
Good to be back.
Do you guys know any really good breweries from Wisconsin?
No, not...
Enlighten us, Jimmy.
Not off the top of my head.
Well, I don't know either.
Just don't Maybe say someone anything can call from in another and tell state. Us.
But I do know that they do have some craft and regional breweries. It goes back to the story about President Obama last year with the Beer Summit. And I'm going to tell this story because I love it. They met in D.C. and they all drank like Red Stripe in San Adams. And I said, you know, I wanted to say to the president, I didn't say it to him. I said, you went to the All-Star game in baseball. You wore the Chicago White Sox jacket and you expressed your regional, you know, identity. And why can't you do that with beer? So it's okay if you're from Wisconsin and you like beer. And that's a great thing for one of our listeners to call in or email. Tell us about your favorite Wisconsin beer.
There's some
we don't
really
know
good
it,
ones.
But we'll tell the world about it.
There's one that has a cherry beer that's just phenomenal. It's a Belgian style. And if, let's see, the next person that sends in the one with the cherry style, I'll give you a seat at one of my ice recreational classes. So that there's a Belgian style brewery in Wisconsin. It's a craft beer, and the first beer that they had in the New York market was a cherry red.
So Sam teaches a class at the Institute of Culinary Education in beer. Is it called Beer 101?
I do Beer 101. I do beer for couples. I do some Guinness classes. I do beer cocktails there. It's really fun. It's like I get a lot of people on dates and they give me marriage advice, so it all works out. And we drink some beers.
All right, so that's the answer to our Milwaukee question, Tom. Thanks for emailing that in. Michael and Manuela, welcome to the show, guys. It's good to
Thank
see
you.
You.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting us back.
I saw you at the Lambic and Sour Beer event the other day at Jimmy's 43.
Yeah, we were there. We had some great sour beers there. I think there were, 12 or 15 sour beers there. All good beers, a couple from Union Distributors, a couple different importers.
There were a couple. There was from Lindemann's to Hansen's. I had the Ode Beer Zell. I really like those the best. And my favorite beer of that tasting was the Ode Beer Zell, B-E-E-R-S-E-E-L, from Shelton Brothers. And it was the Frambois. And it was totally different than Lindemann's. It was tart, but it was so refreshing. And there was that. They say that to finish the fermentation, they actually throw the whole fruit into it. And it continues the fermentation, and you end up with just the pits of the fruit. I mean, it's real old school fruit lambics. And
talk about using everything in the fruit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to dish Lindemann's, but I have to. I mean, Lindemann's gets like buys some lambic, mixes it with lager, and throws in some fruit syrup or something like that. And it's a very popular beer. If you haven't tried like Lindemann's Frambois, you know, for people that like wine or fruit beverages, it's really good. There's
it's
nothing
the lambic
wrong with it.
Training
it
wheels.
Tastes good, and it's actually all natural.
Yeah.
But Beer Oudzelle, you know, it's just or Cantillon, like, you know, Creek or Frambois.
The Cantillon,
you
know, is wonderful.
Yeah, those are the real beers you want to be drinking if you're interested in learning about lambics. Hi, Manuela. How are you?
Hi. So speaking of the sour beer event, we tried the brewery's Berliner Weiss, and the beer that we brought today that everybody's drinking out right now is a Berliner Weiss inspired by the brewery's Berliner Weiss.
Although, is this a homebrew that you guys made?
It is.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Really tart.
I love Berliner Weisses.
Yeah, it's pretty close to the brewery's Berliner Weiss as well.
Now, do you guys ever put syrup in this, like the Woodruff stuff, or no?
We haven't yet. No, we like our beer sour, so we don't want to put anything sweet.
I think that Berliner Weiss was a slightly sour style
always,
and I think that as it became more industrialized, it became thinner and more tart. And it was easier to make, and they figured, oh, people will just add this splash of a sweet syrup. But I like a Berliner Weiss. This actually ties in with National Homebrew Day for me, because it seems like the consciousness of beer has been raised in the last few years. It used to be, when we first opened Jimmy's 43, the obvious question was, oh, what's like a Stella? And we had, you know, Strub, Pilsner, or some other German Pilsner. And now, you know, the last year, the most common question we get is, do you have a sour beer? And Berliner Weisse, this is a really well-made Berliner Weisse, Michael. Thank you.
And for the homebrewers, it's like, you know, before 1978, like in 1978 when they passed that law, there was no Berliner Weiss available in this country. You had to go to Berlin to get it. And so now all these other beers are inspiring all the home brewers. You know, the 15,000 brands that are available in the U.S., it's like, hey, I wonder if I could do that. I wonder if I could make that recipe. And you know, maybe not hit it on the head, but give it my own interpretation. That's a wonderful thing.
Well, what's great about homebrewing is that it's actually now it's raising the standards for all, you know, breweries. I mean, whether it's regional or craft, you can say these guys made this. When did you make this beer, Michael?
We brewed it maybe a month ago, and it's been sitting in a keg for a couple of weeks. And a couple of days after we kegged it, we tried it, and we actually didn't like it at all. We thought it had a lot of kind of strange off flavors. So we just kind of forgot about it and let it sit in the keg for a couple of weeks, and we're having it now, and we think it's, you know, much better than it was.
But this is a super fresh local beer, and it's really what beer is supposed to be about. So I hope that you know, there will be more small craft beers that are inspired by our local homebrewers who will make these super local, super small scale beers, and I'm going to support them. I'm going to buy them. I'm going to drink them. That's what I want to drink.
Us too, and I think it's really happening more and more, and it's not so much that the breweries didn't want to make those beers. It was because they weren't able to sell them. And so most brewers came from a home brewing background to begin with. But now that the awareness of beer has been raised, I think that you see breweries like the brewery out in California that can come out with a Berliner Weiss and people will buy it because it's from, they know that beer is going to be good because it's from that brewery. And I think it just gives a lot of smaller breweries the freedom to come out with more interesting beers because people are more interested in drinking them.
Yeah, it's really fun. Go ahead, Milana.
I think the other thing about brewing a Berliner Weiss that's great is that it doesn't take a long time. You know, brewing can be very time consuming, but with a Berliner Weiss, you don't have to do a boil, so it's just a couple hours. So
that's really good. That's really good. Yeah, that baking side of it, that cooking side, it's a real inhibitor when it comes to it. But you can make some kind of rock and roll beers that don't take too long, but do the trick, you know.
So Mike, so this is an easy beer to make.
I mean, it's you know, as these guys have been talking about, all grain isn't that much tougher than doing an extract beer. And with this one, it's a lot quicker because you're not supposed to boil it after you get the sugars out of the grains. So you know, it's that saves you an hour and a half of having to boil it and then cool it for half an hour. So
what's another beer that you've made that takes a long time or a lot of effort?
Well, this Saturday we made an IPA and it took a good 6 hours, right?
No, not six, more like four.
So what was the difference in the process?
The difference is that instead of, well, with the Berliner Weiss, you mash it to get the sugars out of it, and then you put it right into the fermenter. But with almost any other beer, you then have to boil it for an hour or so. A couple of reasons. There's You add hops to it to bitter it and to add hop flavor, and also it the the boiling helps to coagulate some of the proteins in it, some of the stuff that you don't want to taste in the finished beer. For those two reasons, you want to boil it for at least an hour.
Well, I really like your beer, Mike. Thank you. My friend Chris Kuzma emailed me a couple of quotes for the show. We're going to close out this segment and take a break. The first thing is, in English pub, ale is ordered by pints and quarts. So in England, when customers got unruly, the bartender would yell at them, "Mind your pints and quarts and settle down." It's where we got the phrase, "Mind your P's and Q's." Like some of these little references, I don't believe it, but it's a good story. But here's something cute to close out this segment. Here we go. Thirsty days hath September, April, June, and November. All the rest are thirsty too, except for those who hath homebrew. So homebrew, nice. National Homebrew Day, Saturday. Go to Diamond Bar in Brooklyn, and we'll see you guys in a few minutes. And I can't wait to hear what the next cool round of music is. Thank you, Bree.
Cheers.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. We've just had a listener email us a list of some Wisconsin breweries. We didn't mean to diss you guys, but we didn't know. So there's Capital Brewery in Middleton, City Brewing Company in La Crosse, Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company in Chippewa Falls. Liney? Minhas Craft Brewery in Monroe, New Glarus Brewing Company.
New Glarus.
New Glarus is famous.
That's the one I was thinking of. I apologize, you guys, in New Glarus.
Northwoods Brew Pub in Eau Claire, Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Stevens Point Brewery, Stevens Point, and Viking Brewery in Dallas, Wisconsin. That's a good representation of New Glarus is it's a beer that we've all heard of. Anyone here ever had New Glarus?
I used to sell it, yeah.
Where'd you sell it?
When I worked for Craft Brewers Guild here in New York.
They used to sell it in New York.
Yeah, we used to bring it in. We did a wonderful beer dinner at the Waldorf with it, and they reduced the cherry beer with the duck, and it was just...
Was that the brewery like you're talking about? The cherry beer?
New Glarus.
New Glarus, hey!
Yeah, that's them.
Our listener, guys, I think it's Tom O'Connor. He's just won a spot in Sam's Cicerone beer class.
Oh, the ice class, yeah.
The ice class. The Institute of Culinary. But let's plug your other classes.
There's another little tiny brewery out there called Wisconsin Dells, and there's a wonderful woman named Jamie Martin there. Who's part of the Pink Boot Society, the Society of Women Brewers. But yeah, the Cicerone classes are happening at your place all summer.
So what you got? You got some in June, July, and August. You can reach Sam at Cicerone.org or Civilization. Tell us, Sam, come
CivilizationofBeer.com. And basically, the classes are only 13 people. And we've got dates in June, July, and August. They're consecutive Mondays every time, except for June, which is separated by a couple. And they're 1 to 6 p.m. They're open to beverage industry professionals only. But contact us at civilizationofbeer.com, and we'll have you down at Jimmy's, and then we can have beers afterwards at Jimmy's, because that's just part of the reason I do the course.
Well, thank you, Sam. It's great to have you there. Jimmy's number 43. We do a lot of things. One thing we're doing every month now is a sour beer or lambic beer event. Mike and his friend. I am in the worst memory state tonight. Mike Henderson and Manuela Toda. There's just too many guests on the show. We're all friends, but there's at least eight people in this room right now. So And I don't have all my cheat notes. I'm not the smartest guy, but and I'm not a beer expert. But what we can say is that almost every month we do have sour and lambic beer events at Jimmy's Number 43, inspired by Mike and Manuela.
And the last one was great. So if you missed the last one, definitely make it to this one.
The next one is in June. And we were talking in the break about our favorite sours and lambics. And Steve, so you've been to the Cantillon Brewery in Belgium.
Yeah, Eric and I went. And it was funny. It was before we really were as much into beer as we are today. And we went on...
Sour beers.
Talking about Cantillon.
I was talking about Cantillon.
I love it.
Well, they make sour beers. They're probably one of the most popular sour beers you can get. And we went on the tour, and we did the tour, and then we had the beer afterwards, and it was sour, and we thought something was wrong. And I think I turned to Eric and said, "Well, I'm glad we did the tour before we tried the beer." And now, like, thinking about it, we can't get enough of it. And like, we just had the Captain Lawrence, their wild ale that was aged for 4 years a couple of weeks back at the Gate in Park Slope, and it was great. And now we just can't get enough sour beer.
It's amazing. I mean, wild ales, wild yeast beers. I mean, Sam, how do you know if a beer is supposed to be sour or it's sour by, you know, mistake?
Well, hopefully you know the person giving it to you, and they should be able to tell you. You know, the person that's serving it, the retailer or somebody like that. But, you know, the sour beers are becoming much more popular.
I mean, it's amazing.
The people that are making them
are refreshing.
Definitely going to tell you.
They seem natural.
They're beer without training wheels. You know, They're really for an evolved palate. And it's I don't want to be a separate guy that says, "Hey, my palate's so awesome, but I have tasted a whole bunch of beers."
I was a wine guy for a long time, and my favorite whites are like a really good Muscadet. It has a very dry, almost sour finish.
Sure.
And you know, Michael, I want to talk to you because you really do make great beers. I mean,
thank you.
When you go about and make a sour beer, what do you have to do to make a sour beer versus a non-sour beer?
Well, there are some organisms, some bacteria that you would use to sour the beer. Lactobacillus pediococcus that you can buy from the same people that you buy regular yeast from.
And you buy it as like a powder?
And no, it comes in a little packet that it's actually like a liquid. So you just open the packet and dump it in there. But there's like, it's definitely more finicky than using yeast. So it's got like a different temperature range that it likes to work in. And, it's a lot slower than yeast. So it's definitely, you got to do it a few times before you really get good at it.
You know, at the Lambic tasting on Saturday, I like, not every beer that I like. I mean, I really like the Eau de Beerzel, the Frambois. Some of the beers are just, they're definitely funky or this kind of yeastiness with the sourness. It might have also been they weren't as cold because they've been sitting out in like a tasting format. I'm curious about, you know, who makes these beers and if there's a market for them. I can see having a few of them on a list at a bar. But I wonder, you know, would you actually have the whole range from Cantillon to Lindemans? You know, is there a demand for lambics and sours, or is it just like something that people are curious about?
I think people who like wine will like sour beers more than they will regular beers. I think that's where you would get a lot of crossover. I think introducing people who like white wine to sour beers would definitely be something they're into, because they're kind of used to that flavor. That complexity already.
Yeah, and a lot of good number of sour beers are aged in wine barrels. Like if you go, is it Russian River? They have three sour beers that each one is aged in a different wine barrel, and it gives you a different taste. And there's Odell in Colorado.
Oh.
Yeah, Colorado. They don't distribute to the East Coast. I think they just made it to Minnesota, almost Wisconsin, but not quite. But they make some really great sour beers, and they hand crush like all the cherries.
They stomped it, actually.
Yeah. Sanitized boots.
That's good.
But when we were just out there and actually shot a video on it, that's on our website at brooklynbrewshop.com. But they just did a whole brewery expansion that was all very, very eco-conscious and sustainability. So it's cool. They have solar panels. They have like cold air coming in to cool their beer. So it's very cool to see breweries heading in that direction as well. But I don't think you'd ever get their sour outside of the tasting room, but it was amazing.
So definitely, like, sour beers are like wild yeast, wild ales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're usually
natural beer.
The yeast in sour beers are pretty much the enemy to any brewery, typically. It's what you try to get rid of because it's so pervasive. And why it's sour is because it eats all the sugar in a beer. So whatever
it dries
sugar,
it out, and yeah, it is pervasive. It's a great word for them because they don't apologize. These beers are not polite, and you either like them or you don't. And you know, the favorite quote about lagers is that they don't make you work hard to like them, but the sour beers make you work. They're like, do you really want to do this? You know, and then you do it.
And once a brewery gets it right, they're terrified to change anything. The Cantillon Brewery in Brussels doesn't clean anything, or not that they don't clean anything, but they don't get rid of cobwebs. They have, I think, like 86 different actual strains of yeast in their beers, and they do blends over years, and they think it's magic because they open the shutters and they let the air in on this one night when they're making that batch, and that's how it turns out. And it is magic. I mean, yeast is the coolest, creepiest organism in the world, but it makes bread and beer, so we love it.
And with sour beers, the emphasis shifts a bit from the brewmaster to the bartender, because you're blending different beers from different vintages, if you know, barring wine terms. So it does place a large emphasis on the actual person serving you
so
beer.
This is cool. Now we're actually getting somewhere. So when you put together your kits for beer, I mean, you also do you include yeast in that, and how do you choose that yeast?
Includes grain, hops, and yeast, and any spices like this lavender or rose hips and rose buds. But yeah, I mean, different yeasts are better for different applications, like
but,
English.
But they're like a set yeast that you know you'll get this result from, and you buy it from a certain place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, after a long series of test batches, we know which yeast is just right.
There's only three kingdoms, and it's animal, plant, and the fungi. And the fungi are mysterious creatures, and part of the dark side. They're the ones that change life into death and decompose. And I'm reading Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, so I just got done with the mushroom chapter and I'm all freaked out. But the yeast is fungi, and we're really not certain how they work still.
So that's why you had the pet pig.
Yes, exactly.
Good, Manuela, hey, what's
Hi.
Up?
So you mentioned Russian River, and that's what we're drinking right now. I don't know if you guys have gotten that. It's Blind Pig.
Blind Pig, speaking of pig.
Yes, and we want to know, we have a question, why you can't get it in New York. We actually ordered it online from, I think it was the caskstore.com.
Yeah, they're on, I think, California.
I don't know. I mean, not every beer is imported into New York. You have to go through, you know, different state regulations and register. It costs money for a brewery to ship out of state. They have to register their label. So I do not know if Russian River is available in New York.
It is not.
I've got something for you, and it's a website called breweryfans.com. And a guy named Jonathan Lunardi just met me a little while back and told me about it. And basically, it will help people that want a certain beer connect with the brewery through that, and they'll know where to market themselves next, which is really good. So really nice little website, breweryfans.com. They just launched, and it's, again, trying to, you know, find those beers. The state regulation and the federal regulation on beer is really insane to tackle sometimes. And I, you know, Russian River is a tiny, tiny brewery. I do know,
market.
Though, they are collaborating with Eatery, Mario Batali, as well as
I think Sam Calagione.
Sam Calagione from Dogfish, and they're making a place right in New York. So I would think that they would want their stuff in by that place being built out.
We hope so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up a little bit. I'll make some announcements. Our sponsor, the Good Beer Seal. There are some Good Beer Seal bar events coming up every Monday at DBA in Brooklyn. There's Liquids of Interest. This coming Thursday at Standings, the Founders Festival. Founders is a brewery from Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's new to New York. And on Saturday, we've been plugging this all night, The Diamond, the bar in Greenpoint, has from noon to 4 p.m. the homebrew demo as part of National Homebrew Day. Tuesday, May 4th at Great Harry in Brooklyn, the Left Hand Brewery night. And every Tuesday at Jimmy's Number 43, $10 tastings. So thank you so much. Check out the Good Beer Seal at goodbeerseal.com. And in closing, find Beer Sessions on Facebook. Talk about tonight's episode. You can email us at beersessions@gmail.com. Thank you to heritageradionetwork.com, our executive producer, Jimmy Carboni, producers Jack Inslee, Bree O'Connor, and engineer Nat Wiener. Thank you so much to our guests, Eric and Steve, and everybody else. Thank you. Have a good night. Beer Sessions, see you next Tuesday at 5.
Cheers.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.